From the darkest corners of the creepy old house down the street, to the screams in the night. Settle in, parafamily, to join with Whitney and Brandon for another spooky episode of the Parunity Podcast.
Hello, hello, para family. How are you doing tonight, Whitney?
Hi, Brandon. I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing great.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us about what we have going on this evening?
Oh, boy, we have a lot. Just so you know, if you happen to be in Virginia, be prepared for a fire weather warning coming up tomorrow afternoon. Because high gusts of wind, and you know that we Virginians, we love to set fires in times when we don't normally should set fires.
We've had that the past couple days, so I'm glad we can send it on to you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. It's the gift that keeps on giving. Well, Parafamily, we're happy to see you tonight. Tonight we have a wonderful guest, a fabulous guest, investigator, author, paranormal advocate, and roller derby queen and cat lover extraordinaire, Alex Matsuo. I'm so excited.
Anything Alex doesn't do?
I'm sure she'll tell us.
Does she crochet?
You'll have to ask her. I don't think so. I'm going to go with no, because none of my friends crochet. I think the trend might continue. I'm sorry, I've never gained any love of, it's a beautiful hobby, but I've never got the knack of it, and none of my friends have a knack for it, so I don't know.
Maybe we should get one of our fans, if they crochet, to send us something with our logo.
Oh, that would be so cute. Or maybe little crochet dolls of us.
Okay.
Oh, those would be nightmares.
It would be.
Maybe they'll be cat toys. Anyway. And I do remember last year at Rock Island Paracon, we did meet somebody that actually made cat toys with catnip in it. Oh, my cat loves those.
Yeah, well, one other thing that we didn't mention that, and you guys can blame me because I dropped the ball, but this is our first episode in year four.
Oh, my God.
No, I take that back. Yeah, year four. Yeah, because it started in 2019.
Yes. Oh my God. 4 years. Happy anniversary to us. We need a cake.
We do. I could go for some cake right now.
I could go for some ice cream cake. That'll make it better.
Always. Always, always.
Maybe we'll talk about our favorite ice cream cakes, but anyway, more about our good friend, Alex Matsuo. Alex is part of the Association of Paranormal Study. Actually, she's the one in charge. This is a really cool organization. It is based in Northern Virginia, but it has members throughout the country. And this team has an active Facebook presence, and they also pursue the paranormal for the sake of finding answers and helping others, which I hope that's why many of us are in the field to begin with.
Yeah, if you're not, then you're in there for the wrong reasons.
As I've said it on times when we've requested guests, fame chasers need not apply. Because we're not going to be able to help you. Anyway, so let's talk about where Alex is from. And yes, it's another Virginia friend. She's from Arlington, Virginia, which is designated as a county located on the southwestern bank of the Potomac River near Washington, D.C. And while it's the second largest city in the Washington metropolitan area, it can't legally be designated as an independent city under Virginia state law. I have no idea. I can't explain it. That's also its own form of paranormal, I'm sure. Arlington is home to the Pentagon, Arlington National Cemetery, the Drug Enforcement Agency's headquarters, and several academic institutions, research facilities, airports, and consulting firms. Yes.
All right. So I'm going to take a second and go out on a limb here and talk about how stupid I am because sitting there going through this stuff and you're talking about how it sits on the banks of the Potomac. And I, in my little feeble Iowan mind, never once thought about the fact that the Potomac went anywhere except for Washington, D.C. It's literally like this log.
For folks who will be listening to us on in the podcast format, Brandon's face is turning all shades of red right now.
Yeah, it just, I don't know why, but it just is like, wow, it goes all the way there?
Yep.
Oh, it's it going to be a wild night.
Okay, let's get wild then.
All right, well, Arlington was originally part of the land grants awarded to several Englishmen as a part of Fairfax County. So the name of the county came from the Arlington House, which was acquired by George Washington Park Curtis.
Custis.
Oh, I don't know how to read the nine either. Grandson of Martha Washington in 1802. So Arlington House eventually passed to Mary Anna Custis Lee, wife of Robert E. Lee.
All right. Yes, Custis is a huge, it's a big prominent name in Virginia. And Martha Washington, that was actually the person that was actually her first husband, the Custis family, before she married George.
At least she upgraded.
You never know. I mean, they ended up not, George and Martha didn't have kids of their own, but he actually raised her children from her first marriage like they were his own. So that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Well, the Resident Act of 1790 officially moved the capital of the United States from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. Originally, President George Washington was supposed to select the location in Maryland, but he shifted the area to be ceded to the federal government to include Alexandria and much of Arlington County. So according to the Mount Vernon website, this act was a compromise between Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and Thomas Jefferson, and inspired the song "The Room Where It Happened" from Hamilton.
Yep.
I love that musical.
Oh, I do too.
Lin-Man, it was so hard not to sing that while I was reading through.
Won't be the room where it happens. The room where it happens. Yes. Well, Alex is actually a theater person first and foremost, so I know she's so happy and over the moon right now. We had to have a theater reference.
We had to.
This is us. All right. And I also provided a link that all of you can check out in the show notes later to Mount Vernon and all that interesting information so you can look it up on your own. So by 1847, the city of Alexandria was returned to the state of Virginia due to economic problems and division over slavery, as you do. In 1861, the state of Virginia seceded to join the Confederate States during the American Civil War. However, the Confederacy never really gained control over Northern Virginia. The U.S. Congress passed a law in 1862, resulting in the confiscation of several estates, including Arlington House. So after quite a bit of back and forth in court, the U.S. Congress ended up purchasing the property at fair market value from the eldest son of Robert E. Lee in 1883, and the grounds eventually became Arlington National Cemetery. And I will find some more information to put up in the show notes about that. It's quite a story, and it's quite a location, too. Yeah.
I've always wanted to go to that cemetery.
I've been there. Actually, my two grandparents are, my dad's parents are buried there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Well, Arlington experienced a lot of growth thanks to an electric trolley line in 1896. And throughout the 20th century, the African-American population was severely reduced due to racial laws banning them from owning property in certain Arlington neighborhoods.
Redlining!
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Row houses were also banned in 1938 as it was a type of housing favored by African-American residents.
Hmm.
Additionally, in the 1940s, the federal government evicted black neighborhoods in favor of building the Pentagon and the highway.
Gee, that sounds so familiar to what happened down here in Richmond when I-95 basically bisected Jackson Ward.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue on.
In February of 1959, Arlington Public Schools desegregated Stratford Junior High, now known as Dorothy Hamm Middle School, and the struggle for integration in Arlington is preserved in oral history at the Arlington County Central Library Collections.
And I included a link of that for the show notes, so please check that out, folks, because it's really interesting. Arlington has been a center for transportation with the Metro and Ronald Reagan International Airport, and a place for technology, defense, research, and economics. And on September 11th, 2001, five Al-Qaeda hijackers crashed American Airlines Flight 77 into the Pentagon, killing all 53 passengers, six crew members, and 115 Pentagon employees and 10 contractors in the building. Fun fact, there's a chunk of cement and metal from the Pentagon on display at the Virginia War Memorial here in Richmond, Virginia. And with that explosive note, let's talk about the hauntings of Arlington. So according to hauntedplaces.org, the Old Post Chapel has been in use since the 1930s as a place where most military funerals for Arlington National Cemetery begin. Reports include doors opening on their own, unexplained voices and footsteps, and an apparition seen in the bridal room, which used to be the private mourning chamber. Yeah. All right. So this, why don't you tell everybody about one of my favorite old school haunted locations?
Okay. So it's technically 2 miles from Arlington, but it's the Octagon House. Mm-hmm. And anybody in this field, I know you've heard about this place. So this building has a connection to...
Well, the place I used to work at.
Okay. So it has a connection to your former workplace.
Yes, it does.
It was built in 1799 for John Taylor III.
Taylor.
Oh, my God.
Another Taylor Virginia name. I know. You hate pronouncing those Virginia names, don't you?
Just about as much as indigenous.
Oh,
I cannot pronounce them for nothing.
But you did well.
All right. Served as though I thought you just had a typo in there.
No, that's actually the family name.
I was just
going
to roll with it, like, okay.
All right, wait until you see one. I'll text one name to you and you can try and pronounce it later. Anyway.
Probably not. But anyway, so this place served as the White House for President James Madison and First Lady Dolly Madison in 1814 after the British destroyed the original White House during the War of 1812. So legends abound about a daughter of the Taylor family throwing herself to her death from the notoriously gorgeous spiral staircase due to pregnancy or a disagreement with her father over an inappropriate love match. But apparently the apparitions of Taylor himself and several enslaved individuals still walk these halls.
So the connection, I used to work at a place called Monocan, which is on the northern neck of Virginia. Mm-hmm. Taylor was actually the father-in-law. The Taylor family have a plantation house called Mount Airy, and a daughter of their family ended up marrying the guy that had Monocan built. So, who was also Francis Lightfoot Lee, signer of the Declaration of Independence, and a cousin several generations removed from Robert E. Lee. So, gotta love how Virginia is one of those webs of old British families that just sort of interconnect. It's crazy. But I gotta tell, I mean the stories about the Octagon House, and it's also beautiful too. I'll put some pictures up and you guys can check it out. But Alex Matsuo and the Association of Paranormal Study do more than study the haunts of Arlington and others. They have their own sites and their own wonderful projects that they pursue, including trauma and mental health. And Alex also literally wrote the book on women of the paranormal. So let's get on the show. Let's get Alex on the show and have her tell us more about it. So, parafamily. Welcome, Alex Matsuo.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. And also the chat is open and up. We have our good friend Ronnie Anderson from Bedford Paranormal on. Hi, Ronnie. And we also have Brian Horton calling in from North Carolina. So, guys, feel free to interact. Feel free to ask questions. And, Alex, we're so glad to have you.
Hey, hey. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. All right. So, you have quite an amazing story of how you first got involved in the paranormal, and it involved a dramatic, it involved theater, it involved a dramatic car accident, it involved being in the hospital and dealing with a hospital haunting. But I'm actually not going to get into that because I think the people that know you have heard that story so many times. So we will make sure that that's up on our show notes so that way people can pursue it, as well as check out your book, One Bed Over, I believe is what it's called, which talks about that experience that you had in the hospital dealing with your injuries and also a paranormal experience of your own. So we'll make sure people check that out. But what keeps you in the paranormal now?
Well, that's a good question.
Yes.
A lot of it just comes from me trying to understand it now from, one could say, from a sociological aspect, you know, how we process ghost stories, how we take in ghost stories, how we internalize our paranormal experiences and express them. Culturally, I love studying it. And also, I mean, we're still discovering new things every day in this field. I mean, I know it's a pseudoscience, but I feel like there's people coming in and out of the field all the time. So we constantly have a fresh perspective on things as well. And I don't know, I've always enjoyed ghost stories. I've always wanted to, and actually the way that I learned about, because I'm only about a 2-year resident of Arlington. I moved here about a little over 2 years ago for a job. And the way that I learned the history and got to know Arlington was to look up the hauntings and the ghost stories around Arlington and Northern Virginia, which it seems that Northern Virginia gets eclipsed a lot ghost story wise by Washington, D.C., Gettysburg, Richmond. They're not as well known as, you know, as these other places. But I'm working on a book about haunted Northern Virginia right now, and I've found some really rich stories that have really tickled me in some ways, broken my heart in other ways. But yeah, it's been, there's just something new to learn every day. And I feel like no matter where I go, I have a community. Like the Virginia paranormal community has really embraced me. Steve Dills comes to mind, you know, it's like, as soon as I came into, I felt like as soon as I crossed the border into Virginia, it was like, hey, welcome, you know, here's some places to check out and here's some events to go to. And, you know, let us know if you have any questions. So that's something else that has, you know, helped keep me going in this is the community.
And for those of you that are watching the video, we just got arm bombed by my son. Preston, please stand up and say hello like a human being. Okay, there you go. You're good. Thank you. That's enough. You need to go to bed. Oh, by the way, we don't edit this out because this we're as real as it gets. Oh, amazing. Lord. Anyway, hi. I just wait for your kids to bomb us sometimes, Brandon.
I always make sure mine are in bed first, and then I go to a different floor of the house.
Yeah. My kid is 13, so that doesn't help. Anyway, so my kid's not important right now. Let's talk about you, Alex.
Oh my gosh.
So because, you know what? We're just going to go ahead and jump into the fact that it's Women's History Month, and you literally wrote the book on women of the paranormal. So can you tell us more, tell all the Para family more about that project and what's to come with it? Because I think you have another volume coming out.
Hopefully. Yeah. So I started Women of the Paranormal, at least this project, I want to say about five-ish, almost 6 years ago. And a lot of it was just because I was curious about just women's history from a paranormal perspective. At the time, I was really involved in women's advocacy, especially advocating for victims of domestic violence. So I was really involved in like women, you know, women's contributions. And it made me think like, you know, I mean, I've run into some female names over the years, but I'm wondering if there's more to it. And I think there was almost something collective going on too, because there was some other researchers that I knew who were also diving into this. And and actually where I started was Catherine Crowe, because I had done a presentation on poltergeists like back in 2012. So like over like 10 years ago at this point. And I remembered seeing the Night Side of Nature, and I decided to do a deeper dive on the Night Side of Nature. And I didn't realize that she was the one who brought poltergeist and doppelganger, the words, into English usage. Mm-hmm. So that's a fairly significant contribution. But yet when the collective paranormal field talks about things like poltergeist and psi and such, Catherine Crowe is rarely named, if at all. I mean, she's getting named more now, which I'm thrilled about, but it just kind of made me think. I'm like, huh, okay. So initially the book was going to be a blog, like a blog series, just hey, women's spotlight. And as I kept going, actually it was Amanda Woomer who mm-hmm. does the Feminine Macabre and Spook Eats. She was like, you know, this would actually be a really good book idea. And I'm like, you may be onto something. You may be onto something. So I decided, I'm like, okay. So I decided to just start writing, and the book in total took about 3 years to finish. My breakthrough didn't really happen until right after I moved to Arlington and I went to the Library of Congress. And I didn't have high hopes of a huge parapsychology or paranormal collection in the actual library. You can request materials, but I had to go get a reader card or a researcher card first. So I was like, okay. So after like 3 or 4 hours, 3 hours of standing in line, because I did this right around cherry blossom season, peak bloom, which is actually happening right now.
Yeah.
And so all the tourists were in town, and anybody can get a researcher card at the Library of Congress. Anybody can. It's beautiful, but it's also very frustrating because the line is ridiculously long. So after spending a couple hours there just waiting in line, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go into the main reading room and just explore, scope it out, see what's there. And I was really impressed with how much they already had on the shelf for parapsychology and paranormal. So I just took out a couple books, just started opening them, and I started finding all these names. And so I was like, okay, I have never heard of any of these names. I want to do a deeper dive. And I ended up finding, I'll tell you, so I ended up finding over 100 women. 38 are in volume one. And mm-hmm. the reason why it's a weird number is just because I couldn't choose. I literally could not choose. I couldn't decide who to cut, you know, at least hold for volume two.
Right.
So that's why it's an odd number. But, you know, I'm like, well, it's my book. I'm self-publishing it. You know, it's my rules. It's fine.
So true.
Yeah. And so I'm working on volume two right now. And pretty much volume two are the leftovers from who didn't get into volume one, or there was so much more to their story and there was so much more research to do that I was like, I don't have the time, and I want to do the research properly. And the thing is with Women of the Paranormal, I wanted it to be a little bit more than a who's who list. So I wanted to go into like their background and why they got into this and what contributions they made. Sometimes those contributions were significant discoveries. Sometimes the contributions were, well, maybe they weren't ethical, but they forced other researchers to step up their game. So
Yes.
I got a couple of those in volume two, maybe a few more than I initially wanted, but we'll see as I go through the list. Because the spiritualism movement was a lot of fun.
That's a fun time.
Yeah, especially when you go into like Florence Cook and Elizabeth Guppy. And
Florence Cook. She's
definitely in volume two. I will say that. It's such a hilarious hot mess. And I'm like, I have to. Like, I can't not talk about her.
I won't give too much away, but for those who really want to know, Florence Cook, quite basically, was a medium in 19th century England, I believe. Was she, yep. Or was she American?
I think she was English.
She was English. Okay.
She
was known for doing for using the ectoplasm technique and manifesting a full body figure of another woman named Katie King. And it basically was like it's like they were both out there at the same time. It's a crazy story. And regardless of how she pulled it off, it's wild. So
yeah, she's English.
Okay. That thought I'd check that.
I had to check, but there were some American equivalences for her. There was a couple. Volume two is going to be a little bit different, a little bit of a different flair, but I always try to keep a decent balance between like Victorian spiritualists. I mean, there were spiritualists who did make contributions, and they're pretty fascinating, but also parapsychologists. I do have a couple of cryptozoologists this time around. Debating adding in a couple of UFO women as well. And the only reason why I'm hesitating is because there is somebody working on a Women of UFO book, which I'm excited about. So I'm like, I don't know if I think I may want to keep that for, you know, keep that for them.
Hold that up for another time.
Yeah, exactly. So, So, I mean, and as it happens when you're doing research and then you end up finding more women, right now I have about 70 women that I'm considering for volume two. Not all of them are done, but they're being written, and I'm seeing like, okay, it's basically, I have to not print them all out, but I have post-it notes of all their names and what they do. And I kind of have like this blank wall in my apartment of like mapping them out. So 35 will get into volume two, and then the other 35 will be volume three. And then I think I have another 40 to consider for volume four.
Wow.
So it's turned into quite a big project, and eventually what I want to do is then put all the volumes together in like a one power tome. In one big power tome. And that one would be better organized. It will probably be organized by like their area of study, or so like spiritualists, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, paranormal investigators, you know, that kind of thing. So it'll be more distinct in the categorization. But because right now volume one is just chronological. It's basically from their birth and like who was born first and who, you know, that's basically the priority. Or if they were born the same year, who died first, you know, then they would go before. So that's how it's organized right now. Volume two, I may play with the categories a little bit just to make things a little easier, because I did get some really good feedback for volume one.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, nothing bad. It was just, hey, here's an idea. Because sometimes I just want to look up who the spiritualists were. And I'm like, that's fair. So we'll see. So volume two will be a little bit evolved. And then we'll see what happens with volume three and four. But so all in all, I'll probably end up with 150, maybe 150, if not 200 women that will be documented by the end of the project. My goal is to get to volume four. We'll see if it's an annual release. I did pause volume two a bit because I have to finish this Haunted Northern Virginia book.
Oh, yeah.
So either what will happen is, and it also depends how fast I write, because I have a really good editor who knows how to speak Alex. ideally, I would like volume 2 out before Haunted America with Troy Taylor in June. Mm-hmm. Ideally. What could happen, and I've already given myself the space to do this, and sometimes when I give myself the space, then I end up actually working. but I've also given myself the space to release in October. So, but I also have the Haunted Northern Virginia book coming out in September, so I have to be very cognizant of my releases. So we'll see. Ideally, I would like it out by Haunted America, which is in June. It's March. I mean, and the book's already over halfway done. We'll see. A lot of it's just getting the words on paper.
So many words, so little time.
And the bibliography is, I had to basically put my work cite in bibliography, and you have the book after each woman, because that was really the only way I could keep track of it. And plus, if someone wants to do further research, I'd rather just have it easy, like at the end of that woman's chapter, instead of like, hey, you have to go back to the bibliography and go through.
That's fun.
A lot. Yeah. All right. All right. I love
bibliography. I need you to do one thing for me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So on this massive tome that you're going to combine them into, I expect to see the little page indents, like the half circle page indents.
Just like a little dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
that would be so cool.
That's styling.
That would be cool. That would be cool. I dig it. I absolutely dig it.
Great idea.
And that's my input for the episode.
Write that down.
Right.
So to kind of backtrack a little bit to the women, what was one thing that you found surprising in terms of this particular project that you found so far? A woman that just completely, maybe somebody you did know about, but you found a whole different take on her and it just blew you away. What was something you found very, very surprising?
Ooh, there's a couple. One of the things I found surprising was, and this actually opened up a whole other potential side project, is the SPR, the Society for Psychical Research.
Yep.
Was very much a safe space for marginalized groups in the 19th and early 20th century. My greatest discovery, not my discovery, but surfacing that there was a lesbian power couple who were researchers for SPR.
Oh, yeah.
Radcliffe Hall and Una Trowbridge.
Yep.
Yeah. And I was very surprised about that. And I was like, I wonder if this was a one-off. And here's the thing. If you look up Radcliffe Hall and Una Trowbridge, they were not in the closet. Not at all. Early 20th century women in Britain. Now, Radcliffe Hall did inherit a substantial amount of money to the point where, I'm going to say she pronouns because that's what she used, but if Radcliffe Hall was alive today, it may have been different. If you look at those two, they were not in the closet. And Radcliffe Hall basically had so much money that she's like, I don't need to marry for wealth or anything. I'm good. I'm just going to wear men's clothes and go by the name John and just, you know, write books and do my thing. And so I decided, I'm like, oh, you know, I wonder if this is like another thing. And then I actually found this whole like queer connection with the founders of SPR, and I'm like, it's spicy. It's very spicy. It's extremely spicy. So that was a shocking thing that I discovered.
Love it
for me, and I dig it. I'm like, you know what? Hell yeah, good for them. And then the other one was there were okay. So oh my gosh, why am I forgetting her name now? Oh my gosh, why am I forgetting her name? Hang on. Alexandra David Neal.
Okay.
When she was born, it was like the later stages of the French Revolution. When she died, Jimi Hendrix was playing Woodstock. When you put it in that perspective, but it's pretty mind-blowing, but there were a lot of women who were orbiting some of the more famous males of the time. I mean, Catherine Crowe, Charles Dickens, Dion Fortune, Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
So you have these women who had male contemporaries who ended up becoming more famous, but their work was fairly substantial, if not completely inspired some of these men. That was a big one that I'm like, son of a bee. Like, well, like Pamela Coleman Smith with the tarot deck.
Tarot deck, yep.
You know, so many times it's called the Rider-Waite deck, but call it the Rider-Waite Smith. She was the designer. And I actually ended up buying, I mean, you check these books out for research because you don't want to pay like $1,000 for books. Mm-hmm. But there was a couple that a lot of the books I ended up buying were Pamela Coleman Smith biographies or art books, like coffee table books of her art. Like you can see like in the history of her style and her influence, and you can definitely see it in the cards, and it's so fascinating. Yeah, no, there's some really incredible women in this book. And my last one that was a total like shock was, oh my gosh, Thelma Moss.
Okay.
And Thelma Moss, I was like, oh, she seems cool. I mean, okay, she ran the parapsychology department at UCLA. If anyone is familiar with the movie The Entity, or the Doris Bither case, you know, with Barry Taff and you know, that research crew, she was overseeing that.
Really?
She was overseeing that, but she rarely gets credit for it. And also, she used to be an actor. She was a Broadway actress, and she was one of the co-founders of the Actors Studio.
That's how I know her name.
Yep. So when she was living in LA and she went through a whole journey into parapsychology, that's another fascinating story. But she was seeing celebrities and testing, you know, psi in celebrities. Carol Burnett was one of them. She was actually one of the last people to see James Dean alive.
Many people
have probably heard the story of how Alec Guinness and James Dean had dinner, and then James Dean showed Alec Guinness the car that eventually he would die in. And Alec
little
Guinness,
devil, little monster,
yeah, something like that. And Alec Guinness said, well, you're going to be dead by the end of the week. Alec was with Thelma Moss having dinner when James Dean invited them to join him. And so Thelma Moss was there. Like, she was part of that. She also tested Lorraine Warren. She also, you know, tested Lorraine Warren's abilities. So she's done quite a bit. Yeah. And she worked with a woman who's also in volume one, Dr. Shafika Karagula, who is George Norrie's aunt.
Really?
Yeah. She actually heavily inspired him, if not influenced him, into doing what he's doing today. And we may not have George Norrie as we know it. We probably wouldn't have George Norrie with Coast to Coast had it not been for, as he refers to her, as his Aunt Shafika.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Brandon, so women I have think you want to get there. That book.
Yeah. So women have been there. Like, they've always been there. It's not a new thing. It's just sometimes they got overlooked, which... sometimes, well, often happens in a patriarchal society. Mm-hmm. It happens a lot. And I was just blown away as I was like reading about these women, and I was like, dang, like y'all have been here. You have always been here. So, you just needed somebody to come out and tell your story. And, yeah. And so I hope, like, because some people have asked me, like, would you have a problem if someone else wrote a book about women of the paranormal? And I'm like, absolutely not.
Heck no.
Please keep writing about them. Write articles. Do blogs. Do podcasts. Like, just make the content. Like, get their names out there. Say their names. That's, like, my big call to action in the conclusion of Volume 1 is say their names. Say their names and say them often.
Love it. Oh. Wow. That just made me so happy. Is it in now? Have you found in so to kind of go over towards your book on haunted Northern Virginia? Have you found any links between women and the paranormal and haunted Northern Virginia yet?
Not yet. Not yet. I feel like there's gonna be a tie there. I'm hoping to find it. A lot. I've been learning, especially with the ghost stories surrounding Alexandria. A lot of the ghost stories in Alexandria are very women-centric. Mm-hmm. You have the Burning Bride of Alexandria, Laura Schaefer.
The female stranger.
The female stranger. There's mm-hmm. also, there's a couple around, the Carlisle House is another, which is right next door to the Schaefer House and across the street from, well, no, two blocks from Gatsby's Tavern. I only live about 10 minutes away from Old Town Alexandria. I love it. maybe 10 minutes. Depends on the traffic.
Traffic is a thing there.
It is. It definitely is.
It's a living entity.
It's a whole, well, especially when you have Maryland drivers. No offense to anyone from Maryland, but y'all don't know how to drive.
I say the same thing about us Virginia drivers.
I've seen Maryland drivers drive down the opposite side of the road. it's a fun one. I'm hoping there's a link there. Since with this Haunted Northern Virginia book, it's a bit different from what I usually write. It's more of like me retelling stories and lore. So mm-hmm. It's been interesting, especially when I'm looking into local legends. I got asked about Bunny Man so much that I had to put it in the book. I knew you were going to make that face. Because I talk to all the local libraries, because, you know, I'm trying to get information, and Arlington has the Center of Local History at the library, at the Central Library.
Right.
Every librarian I have talked to since I started this research was, have you heard of Bunny Man? Have you heard of Bunny Man Bridge? I'm like,
yes.
No, not at all.
At some point, you're getting to the point where you're like, yes. What's new?
Right. I'm like, are you? Yeah. It's like, tell me something I don't know. But there's a God that could be a whole book in of itself, though, just with the and its relationship with like paranormal lore too, just how many times stories can get twisted and changed. Cause I'm pretty sure there's over 50 variations of the Bunny Man legend.
That story. Yeah. When we did our urban legends episode, we actually did include Bunny Man because I had to. And I'm like,
you have to.
We haven't had his name pop up on the show for a while. So,
well, we'll also, oh, Mothman is another name we can pop up on the show again, but we've done that.
Did you see the picture of the Mothman statue with the coin in its butt crack?
Yes.
There's that one. And then they gave him a tram stamp. Mm-hmm. It's got the nice little butt crack tribal.
Don't deface the Mothman statue, guys. It's awful. That's awful. He already gets violated by people touching his butt.
I'm one of the people that smacks his butt when I visit.
So I'm actually going to go. I have plans to go to the Mothman Festival for the first time this year in September. So that'll be fun.
Touch the butt.
Yes, I will touch the butt. I will go into the Mothman Museum and tell the curator there that you said hi. Because he was such a big help to us in that mm-hmm. episode. Nice. And then we're also going to take another trip to Trans-Allegheny. So nice. That'll be interesting. So what about you, Alex? What are some of you now as part of Association of Paranormal Study? Hoot hoot. Yes, we love you guys. I know that a big part of your mission is to just bring folks together and try and just develop and learn from the field. And I know you've got something coming up Gettysburg.
I do. So
why don't you tell the Para family a little more about APS?
So I started APS in 2011. You mentioned, you know, that harrowing experience I had after my car accident, which happened New Year's Eve 2005 and went into 2006. One of the big takeaways from that experience was we couldn't find anyone to help us. We eventually got help from randomly the Greek Orthodox Church. But overall, like, the paranormal community that we have today did not exist in 2006.
That's true.
Today, all I would have to do is make a Facebook post and I would have 40 teams knocking, banging on my door. Back then, not quite so much. And so I started the team so that I could have a group of like-minded individuals with me in a group, but also to help be a resource for people who don't know what the frick is going on. You know, like, they're having terrifying things happening and they don't understand. And since then, that's always kind of been our foundation. We don't do as many residential cases anymore. Not since the lockdown, we've greatly, like, I don't even think we've done, I mean, I've done a lot of consulting, but I haven't been boots on the ground in someone else's home in a few years now. And I think it's also because the climate has changed too, especially with like social media and why call a team in to investigate when you can just take video of what's going on, then post it online and get feedback. I mean, that's kind of what it is now. But still, we still have a mission of like community engagement, empowering through education. You know, when we have tables at events, we'll hand out pamphlets of like how to determine if your house is haunted or not, possible explanations. I've been debating bringing back our monthly meetup group, in at least in this area. And, you know, just talking with people who've had experiences, share different topics. That's actually coming together. It's all going to come together in August. I've always wanted to put on a conference, a paranormal conference, not a convention where it's people from TV and there's vendor tables. And I mean, there's value in those events, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But since I've been in the field, and we're talking, oh my gosh, for a long time,
a while,
I've only done one event that was an actual like academic style conference where you submit an abstract and you present your ideas to a audience of peers and you talk and you get feedback and then you argue about it at dinner. I love that the thought of being challenged and seeing what everyone's working on or what theories people are coming up with. I absolutely adore that. But that hasn't been that hasn't really been a thing lately. The closest thing I think was Hanover Tavern. And they had some, and I'm not just saying that because I presented, but even like the year before when I didn't present, they still had some really good topics happening.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So that's a great event. So my team, we're planning the Paranormal Research Symposium in Gettysburg on August 17th. And it's purely just a conference, so there's no vendor tables. You are going there to learn, ask questions, speak up. We booked the Gettysburg Hotel. Wow. We booked the Eisenhower Room, just the Eisenhower Room. And then Ghost City Tours, they're donating their space for additional breakout sessions and workshops. And Ghostly Images of Gettysburg, who oversee the Jenny Wade House and the orphanage, they have also donated their space for additional sessions. So we actually have three different buildings where we're going to have programming. And we just closed abstract submissions this past Friday. Mm-hmm. We'll have to decline a few because we don't have enough programming space, which is exciting though. And I was really thrilled when Ghost City Tours and Ghostly Images wanted to jump on board. They're like, we need something like this. We need an event like this. And I didn't realize how many people wanted something like this as well. So we've gotten some really impressive abstracts. That was the requirement. You submit a 300-word abstract on what your presentation is going to be. we have a rubric, and we have the team is acting as the committee because we have a pretty stellar team, and you know, we have a pretty amazing team. Who, like, two of them are teachers. I mean, and I work in learning enablement and design by day, and then the other is a college professor, and you know, mm-hmm. so we have some really like smart people. I'm not the smartest person on the team. We have some really smart people on the team to go through these abstracts. And so we're grading it based on the rubric. So it's not biased. It's basically, hey, you know, does the abstract hit these points? Cause I wanted to make sure that this wasn't like, oh, hey, you're my friend. Come be a guest at my event, which is another thing that's very common in the paranormal event circuit. So it's going to, I mean, I'm reading the abstracts right now and I'm like,
that's exciting.
Oh man, it's going to be a great event. It's going to be Yay. Such a good event.
And it's August 17th.
17th.
All yep. right. So folks, mark your calendar.
yep. Yeah. Yep. It'll be in Gettysburg. Yep. it's gonna, and we'll put out a call for volunteers as well. So, we're going to put tickets on sale next month. Mainly because I wanted to see what the programming was going to look like before we put tickets on sale. And so tickets go on sale next month. We're going to send out acceptances to the speakers, and then yeah, we'll be rocking and rolling in August. So crossing fingers, it all goes well. Look, yeah, I was about to say, because there's a couple people who are like, well, I can't come this year, but I want to come next year. Is it going to come back next year? And I'm like, I don't know. We'll see how this year goes and we'll see how my mental health is.
And that's an important thing that also that you advocate for a great deal in the paranormal field is mental health. And mm-hmm. I really hope that's something that we can talk about a little bit more. Mm-hmm. What would you say would be some of the key things that people should watch out for with their mental health as they're exploring their paranormal journey?
Yeah. So I have found myself getting caught in the rat race of constantly making content and constantly mm-hmm. researching, constantly writing and not giving myself a break, which is not good for my mental health. Especially since I do work a full-time job. In addition to all of this, I'm not one of those content creators that, hey, this is my full-time job. And I don't think that's ever going to be me. So I've watched some friends who either got on a TV show or they went viral and they quit their jobs. And then in a year or two, it's that opportunity's not there anymore. So I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm going to keep working my day job. I think prioritization is a big thing, especially time, just me time. That's a big one. Grounding, not necessarily shielding, but definitely grounding is a big one. Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. Grounding, and then the socialization is complicated because there's a lot of different types of people in the field. Some of them do want to go viral and be able to quit their jobs and, you know, do the spooky thing. And then there's others who are like, hey, I'm just here to meet new friends. And then there's others who are like, hey, I'm here to learn as much as I can. There's such a rich audience of people. And, you know, we all kind of gravitate towards our little pods, as I call them. I don't want to call them cliques because, I mean, they're really not cliques. It's just, hey, I vibe with you better than I vibe with that person. So I'm going to hang out with you more. But sometimes I have noticed that friendships can end explosively. And mm-hmm. I have to say, it's not really encouraging for me to continue to socialize. Sometimes I'm like, you know, I'm just going to keep my head down and do some, and just keep my nose in a book, you know, and, you know, just ride whatever this is, ride it out. So, That's what makes it tough because I've watched a lot of paradrama in the last couple weeks, especially.
Oh, yeah.
It's been worse than usual the last couple weeks. And don't know. I just kind of look at this. I'm like, you know, we have to look at the bigger picture here. Why are we here? That's probably the biggest thing with my mental health and the paranormal. I have to keep reminding myself why I'm here. Mm-hmm. So if I have a fallout with a friend, or somebody says something rude to me in a comment, or I do my research and then someone or I debunk my own data, you know, I have to keep reminding myself, why am I here? You know, and sometimes that means I'm here, but I need to take a break. Listening to your body. I tell my team, I'm like, listen, if you get to a point where you're crying every day or you can't sleep, you need to take a step back. Like, you absolutely have to take a step back. And also, the paranormal will be here waiting for you if you need to step away. That's a big thing. So, and also, you know, if I'm having experiences, go see my doctor. You know, that's like point A. Go see my doctor and make sure, like, hey, is everything good? You know, do I need to reassess some medication? You know, what's going on here? So
that's really helpful. Hi, Brandon.
Hello.
He's smiling. So we have had some amazing conversations. You've got so much going on, and I know I'm going to be seeing a lot more of you.
Yeah.
Yes,
you are.
We're the two redheads. Oh boy. Oh, so I do know that. So one thing we touched on in our introduction is you are a cat lover extraordinaire. And
I am.
You have a little kitty named Towa. Is it Towa or Tawa?
Towa.
Towa. Does Towa like to climb on the walls and bat at the post-it notes when you're mapping for your book?
Yep. Yep. She's about 8 months old, so yeah.
Cats are good for your mental health, actually. So are dogs.
Right now she's laying on the floor in front of my couch, so.
Yeah, Odin is probably, that's my cat, is probably either lounging in our bedroom or he's laying right in front of the front door and right in front of the office door waiting for me to get out and feed him.
Aww. Again, keyword.
Frickin' dry food. Dry food is the worst thing that was ever invented for cats.
I feel that.
How are you doing, Brandon?
So, Alex, where's the best place for people to go and find your books that you've written?
So people can go to my website, alexmatsuo.com, for my list of books. They can also go to Amazon, just type in my name, Alex Matsuo. I should pop up. You'll either get me or Matsuo Basho. So, you get a Asian redhead or a legit Japanese poet of, you know, the Edo period. Yeah.
Edo period.
Yeah.
It's crazy. All right. Well, and we'll make sure that we put links to your books in our show notes so that way everybody can come and learn more about you and learn more about your experiences and get some pretty interesting stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also apparently Sherry Fry is online right now and she says, aww, you have some fun stuff on your Etsy.
I do. Yeah. I got t-shirts, mugs, signed books. So if you do want a signed book from me, I do sell them in my Etsy shop, but yeah, I got t-shirts, mugs, sweatshirts,
posters.
Yeah. I don't sell coasters on Etsy anymore, but I do have coasters.
Yes.
I'm happy to sell coasters offline. It's just some people like to take advantage of Etsy's customer policies where they kind of side with the customer all the time. So, you know.
Gotta love Etsy. I'm showing this. This is not crochet. No. that's going to be the subtitle of this episode. Friends who don't crochet.
I do not crochet. My grandma tried to teach me and it did not it did not stick.
And where else can we find you and the and APS?
Yeah, so you can find me and APS on Facebook. I have a Facebook group for the spooky stuff. There's a Facebook group and page for APS. I started the spooky stuff so I could run my mouth and not have APS like be on the receiving end of any backlash. Gotcha. You know, where I could be a little more informal too. But yeah, so APS, if you look up Association of Paranormal Study, it's just Association of Paranormal Study. There's a couple of variations with like Carolina Association of Paranormal Studies or Michigan Association of Paranormal Studies. We're not affiliated with any of them. They're wonderful people, but we're just Association of Paranormal Study. So yeah,
there you go. And it sounds like you've got a lot of stuff coming up, so we'll keep your eyes out for the Gettysburg Conference and everywhere else that you may end up being at over the year. And thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Well, thanks for having me. This was a blast.
Yay. A lovely, lovely blast of spring. And it's cherry blossom. Yeah.
We're stuck back in the cold now, so.
Oh, it's not that bad. It's not as bad as it has been.
No, I meant here.
Oh, Brandon's in Iowa, just so you know, Alex.
Yeah, that's a different beast.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Brandon, want to take us out?
Sure. Well, thanks again, Alex, for being a guest on our show, and thanks for everybody for tuning in.
And if you listen to us via Apple Podcasts, please be sure to leave us a 5 stars or leave us a good review. And we do look at the reviews because they give us feedback to help us make the show better. Right, Brandon?
That is right. And if you're an Android listener, you can follow us on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts. Is that the one that got disappeared? I don't know. Or either. Anyways, you could just simply say, Alexa, play the ParaUnity podcast, because she's our friend and she will, and screw Siri. So if you want to be a guest on our show, or if you'd like more ParaUnity, you can always stop by our Facebook or our website. You can also stop by our website and buy us a cup of coffee.
Because we need it.
Always.
Always need coffee. So he's Brandon, and I'm Whitney, and you have been. And thank you to our very active and very happy and engaged chat. You guys are wonderful, and you all have been in the best place that brings our para family a little closer together, the ParaUnity Podcast. Have a good night, everyone.